Hi everyone, my name is Robert McQueen. I work for a company based out of the UK and Canada called Canabra Limited. We're some of the main developers of the Telepathy Real-Time Communications Framework and Farsight Media Streaming Library and that kind of thing. Okay. I'm a Debian developer originally. Spent some time working on the Pigeon Instant Messenger client. That won't be on the tape then. And as I said, one of the directors. I'm the lead architect, developer, pointy head boss, cat herder, whatever, of the Telepathy project. This talk is obviously about telepathy and collaborative applications. But first of all, a quick summary of what telepathy is. It's a D-bus API which abstracts real-time communication protocols. So you can use telepathy to speak to connection managers, which run in the background on your desktop session or on your device, and connect to an instant messaging server of some description, and speak the protocol on your behalf. The clients can use the standard API to do stuff on that connection, presence, messaging, connecting to stuff. Which gives you a picture that looks something like this. Use Dbus IPC to speak between the clients and the backends. The backends speak whatever protocol you need, and the clients can all access those connections through the standard API, which gives these nice benefits. The components split down and can be reused to do different things. Each component only has to deal with being a protocol or being a UI, and this means that the people who are good at writing protocols write the back ends, and the people who are good at writing front ends write the front ends. And user interface code can be written once and reused on any different protocol. So you don't have to know about the protocol or care what protocol is being used to write your user interfaces. It allows you to share your connections between multiple client processes. So you run the connection in the background on your desktop, then any program that you run on your desktop can pick up that connection, use it to do something, send a file, chat with somebody, start a call, that kind of stuff. And because we're using Dbus, then each of these, the clients and the backends, all run in separate processes, meaning that you can choose whatever language you want that has a Dbus binding, C#, Java, Python, C, Qt, whatever you want. And so it's a good enabler for integration of this functionality into the desktop. A quick summary of kind of how the API looks. Everything starts from a connection manager, which is confusingly an object that every telepathy connection manager exports, and obviously the connection manager itself. It gives you connection objects when you request them. So you say, here are my settings for my Jabber account, give me a connection object for that. And on the connection object, you can then go online, request channels, which are the next kind of object down in the hierarchy. And the connection object has interfaces to do stuff like get the aliases of your contacts, see who's online, get their avatars, that kind of stuff. But most of the communication is done through the channel objects themselves. So you have different channel types for instant messaging, for going into media calls, audio video stuff, managing your contact lists, that kind of thing. And the channels also have interfaces on them, such as a group interface will represent a channel that has a group of people. So that's used for multi-user chat, or your contact list, that kind of stuff. Contacts who you interact with in a connection have integer handles, which are not, as some people think, a performance optimization. They're not. They are for normalization purposes. The idea being that telepathy clients don't have to make a round trip to the connection manager to compare two strings. If they look up handles for the addresses that you have on a particular protocol, then they can sort of offline compare those numbers to each other and then know when an incoming call comes from somebody who's already on your contact list, that kind of stuff. Handles also used to refer to rooms on a server, so a multi-user chat room, and contact lists you have, such as the groups that are stored on the server, that kind of thing. And each channel object usually refers to a particular handle. So you have an IM chat with a particular contact handle, or you have a contact list channel, which is this group of people through. The specification is always online at telepathy-freedesktop.org and is basically the most important output of the project. If everything draws our software and uses the API, then it will let people plug stuff together, which is the kind of goal of telepathy. I've also got telepathy specification stuff hooked into DevHelp, which makes it searchable and clickable and nice and stuff. I think Daf did that, which is very handy. Telepathy backends at the moment. We have lots of amusingly named things. Gabble is the XMPP backend. It's kind of the reference implementation. It's the first one that we wrote. And we're very committed to supporting XMPP as well as we can, and have done various work on specifications, like Jingle, video, audio calling. Salu is the link local XMPP backend, and speaks to Bonjour, iChat, Rendezvous, whatever it's called this week, protocol, which uses MDNS to find people on your local network, and then makes direct TCP connections to actually exchange messages and things. The SophiaSIP backend uses the SophiaSIP library, obviously supports calling, messaging and things over the SIP protocol. Butterfly is written in Python using the PyMSN library and lets you speak the MSN protocol. The latest version, which is apparently even worse than previous ones. Idle is the IRC backend, and Haze was the result of a Summer of Code project last summer, which loads in libpurple backends. So everything it's Pigeon can do, we can load those in, so we can go on to AOL, ICQ, whatever. Telepathy is hopefully making its way onto the GNOME desktop in the Empathy project, which is based off the UI of Gossip, and refactors some of that into libraries so you can embed telepathy kind of widgets into various things, and obviously uses the backends for all the presence and messaging and that kind of stuff. So any of those backends you can install and you can use them through Empathy. Something that turned up when I was writing a talk last year was a nice command line client which also uses libempathy. That just shows that you can use telepathy backends for different stuff. The Nokia internet tablet devices come with telepathy for their built-in IM and VoIP functionality. Nokia have written their own UIs for contacts and chats and calls and use our backends to provide that functionality. You can download packages and install them so that all the other protocols I mentioned before are also available through the same UI. It gives a good user experience. The OLBC project uses telepathy backends to support XMPP when it's in a school environment and there's a server there, then the laptops can make connections directly to the server and use that. And when there's no server, then they use the local backend. They do MDNS and things, so you can take laptops anywhere you want and they can talk to each other in a sort of ad hoc multicast way. And Tubes, which is basically what this talk is about, are a fundamental part of the activity sharing mechanism on the old PC laptops. And the API that's presented to all of the activity programs is the same, whether you're connected to a server or whether you're just doing link local stuff. The activities don't need to care. They just see people and they can start talking. So the idea behind Tubes is it's a channel type in telepathy that lets you set up tubes, right? To exchange arbitrary data between people's applications. There are two types of tubes at the moment. The stream tubes, which allow you to export existing stream protocols. So if you have a TCP service of some description, you can take a contact off your contact list and say, okay, here's my VNC server, or here's my web server, and this kind of thing. And then they can connect to it. And the other thing we have is dbus tubes, which make the connection manager kind of behave like it's a bus daemon. And each application is one person connected to the bus. So you can export objects, emit signals and call methods and things. And these are implemented on both the XMPP and the local XMPP backends. The idea of this, rather than just connecting people directly, is that the connection manager can do extra stuff for you. It can take care of nasty details like NAT traversal and multicast, if you're doing that kind of thing, or relaying through the server if that's necessary, and that kind of stuff. So the application doesn't have to grub around trying to get a connection or trying to work out, you know, which IP addresses to use, that kind of stuff. You can just say, here's my contact, let's chat with him, or let's export the service, or, you know, let's pay Quake, whatever. It means that you can get a lot more stuff done, hopefully. You can do multi-user collaboration using dTubes without having to write a particular server protocol or server process, that kind of thing. And if you're using the dbus tubes, then you can use dbus language bindings to take care of doing the marshalling for you. So you can just export objects in the same way that you export them on dbus, and then it's an IPC protocol instead of IPC. The API looks something like this. You request a tube type channel, or you're given one when somebody sends you an incoming request, you get a new channel signal. You can call the list tubes method on that, and this returns you all of the tubes which are currently open in that channel, so their ID, where they came from, what type they are, this kind of thing. And when new tubes are offered to you, then you get a new tube signal, which gives you the same information, so you can update your kind of client state. And there are different types of methods depending on which type of tube, because they need different types of information. So you often accept tubes using a method specific to the type of tube that you're using. Tubes have a state, which is basically pending local approval. So somebody has sent a request to you, before anything happens, you need to OK it. Pending remote approval, which means you've sent a request out, you're waiting for the other end to respond. And open, which means you can get the socket and you can start sending data over it. For stream tubes, they have different address types. Obviously, you need an address locally, which you're exporting. And then when the person accepts it on the other end, they get the local socket that they connect to. So we support IPv4, IPv6, and Unix sockets as well. Dbus is a bit of a special case because it has its own way of representing a Dbus transport. Usually we'll use a Unix socket, but it's formatted as a magic Dbus address thing you just give to libdbus and it's sorted out for you. And there are different types of access control on these sockets. With a IPv4 socket, you can restrict it to people only on localhost, or you can say, if it's a Unix socket, you can check the user, or if it's a IPv4 socket kind of on the network, you can say who's allowed to connect to it. Which means you can theoretically use the tubes to, in the same way you might use SSH forwarding, you can kind of let people in your local network connect through and back to the other end, that kind of stuff. So stream tubes are the simple one. You offer your service using the offer stream tube method. You put in a service type, which is a DNS SD service name, so you know, RFB or HTTP or whatever you want. And there's a dictionary of parameters. So if, for example, your VNC server needs a login, you can pass the username and password in that dictionary, and you know that goes through the signaling path, and so only the person who's allowed to connect will get it at the other end. You need to say what the address that you're exporting is, which is IPv4 address, localhost. So there are different formats of address which you pass into the address field. And then you can tell the other end what type of security they should put on the socket when it appears. This is your stream identifier, and then that will send the request to the other end, and then they should get a new tube signal, and then you do something like accept the tube. So by accepting the tube, they say, OK, I want your VNC service, please give me a local host socket, and then it'll start doing a setup for that. When the tube is ready to use, then you get the state chain signal, and it goes open. And then you can get your address to connect to by calling the this address here, this method here, and give you your local host address, or whatever. DTube is slightly different. As I said earlier, the connection manager takes care of more stuff for you. It allows you to do multi-way things, which obviously you can't do with the stream protocol. So you can have a chat room, and you offer a Dbus tube to it, and you can export a service on that connection, and then multiple people can use that service. You can emit signals which are broadcast to everyone in the room, or you can send method calls to other people in that room. So the connection manager takes care of giving everyone a unique Dbus name within that dtube. And every client who connects is a bus endpoint, and they have a name. API is pretty similar. You use the offer dbus tube method. Less information necessary because you also have to connect to the tube on your end. So your dbus library gets given the transport address and connects to it, and the same way that a dbus client connects to the bus daemon. That's appears at the other end as a tube. They accept it using the accept dbus tube, which just says yep, and then it will open a dbus socket on their end, and the clients on both ends can connect to it and then start sending messages once it's gone open. And the getTube address gives you the dbus magical address string, and you just put that into your dbus bindings. So as I said, the two implementations that we have are in the GABL backend, DivX in PP, and the SLU backend. GABL, at the moment, sends everything via the server using Base64, because we wanted to make the API work first, and then we'll go back later and do the exciting stuff, like the TCP connections or NAT traversal and this kind of stuff. So the Base64 stuff through the server isn't obviously the greatest performing thing, but it works all the time. In multi-user tubes, use a multi-user chat room in Jabber, so the membership of the room controls who can take part in the service, that kind of thing. So we don't have to worry about any of that. And we use the stream initiation stuff in XMPP to open the peer-to-peer connections. SLU uses Link Local Protocol, NGINX stuff, for its one-to-one presence and messaging stuff. And when you send, when you open peer-to-peer tubes, then those go with direct TCP connections, because you know that they're all link local and there's no NAT traversal problems. Multi-user tubes are implemented in the same way that SLU implements chat, which is using a reliable multicast protocol, which has various message types. It has heartbeat messages to tell people who's in the chat room, and it uses negative acknowledgements to work out when it's lost a message. Every sender has a counter of which messages he's sent, and when you see the counter, well, every message has those counters attached, and when you see those counters skipping, then you know that you've missed the messages, and you should go and ask somebody else for what have I just missed. And they use those counters to also guarantee that you won't see a response before you see the message that caused it, so you won't have a conversation that goes kind of, I'm fine, thanks, hi, how are you, from different participants. You get everything in not the right order, but at least you get replies before the initial request, which is not as strong a guarantee as dbus, which is kind of strictly ordered, but this is a distributed system nonsense. It works, basically. Telepathy Python is the Telepathy spec is in a kind of marked up dbus injured vector format that has lots of extra information that's names, types, and constants, and this kind of thing. And there's some wondrous generation machinery which we put the spec through, and XSLT, the XML, and outcomes Python, which gives you constants for all of the telepathy constants and this kind of thing, and some hand-coded wrapper stuff which deal with getting a channel object or a connection object for you and finding all the interfaces and giving you proxy objects to use them. But actually on the client side, it's very thin. You don't have to do a lot because the dbus bindings map the dbus API just into Python for you, and you can just call the methods on those proxy objects. I've got an example Python thing, which is derived from one of the examples in Telepathy Python, mostly deleting code, so that I don't have to explain it at vast length. But the general idea is that it can export a local VNC service, offer that as a stream tube to the contact that we enter, and then on the other end, when we get a tube in, then we'll connect to it. And that will be hooked up by the connection managers, and we'll have a look at the code. So to use telepathy, then obviously you need dbus stuff and you need the telepathy constants that we need. What we want to use. The StreamTube clients thing just does boring stuff for us. Sets up the connection based on the parameters that we have in the file, and hooks up some signals on the connection. So telepathy tells you when you've gone online with a status change signal, and it tells you when new channels arrive with a new channel signal. Run the main loop, blah, blah, blah. It prints out when the status changes. Interesting bit here is when we actually get a new channel off the connection, then we, if it's a tubes channel, then we hook up all of those tube signals to our callbacks. So state change, new tube, tubes closed, that kind of thing. And print out all of the tubes which are currently open. This is the base class, the kind of interesting bits use. The interesting bits are further down. If we have a new tube, then we call the tube open method. Yeah, blah, right. Interesting bit one. So this is the initiator end. This is the guy who has a service and he wants to offer it to somebody. We have a contact ID. Once we've connected to the account that we want, then we get the handle for that contact, which will probably be one or two. Will be one, there'll be two. Connection manager allocates them sequentially. Request a tube channel with that person. So because it's a contact handle, handle type contact, and we pass in the handle that we got above. And then we make a proxy object for that channel, and then we offer our stream tube. So we have VNC server running on localhost port 5900 and IPv4, off we go. On the other side, this guy will connect and wait for an incoming tube request. So this is it overrides the new tube callback, and if it's a local pending tube, so it's something that's incoming, hasn't been accepted yet, it's for RFP, which is defined up there, it's not accepted yet, then we'll accept the tube. And then when the tube is open, then we'll get the address with get stream tube socket address and stuff it into our VNC client. I found a bug earlier where it gives you an IPv4 address but says it's a Unix address, but we'll fix that later. So let's see if that works. I've logged in using Zephyr here. So there's a Gnome desktop which has got the Vino built-in remote desktop thing turned on. Or not. Yeah, there we go. So other people can log in here. This is a VNC server running. So first of all, I'll log in my test2 user, connecting to my local WebD, which should connect, and is now waiting for incoming tubes. And then this guy will also connect and then offer the VNC tube. That's all got very exciting. That's worked. So it's launched on the listening end. We've got a tube and it's opened a local socket on port 44349, which is a proxy for the one that was offered on the initiating end. And it's launched a VNC client. And this dialog box here should allow me to allow the connection. And then, ta-da, it's VNC via telepathy. Isn't that exciting? You can see that obviously there's some overhead to turning the entire connection into Base64 and then back again. we'll fix that very soon. The important thing was to get the API so that it works and then give it to people so they can use it. And then we make it faster and more clever and things behind the scenes. It's the kind of point of telepathy that we can do these sort of rocket science, and then the API is just the abstraction. You just deal with that. The other API that we spend a lot of time developing is the telepathy glib library, which is, again, through wondrous amounts of XSLT and Python and absolute insanity, generated out of the telepathy XML specification. We've recently been trying to rewrite the client-side API so that it hides the pain of dbus glib behind some very nice methods which do useful things for you, like, you know, type safety and not kind of inlining kilobytes of code into your application, that kind of thing. So we will have an API in 0.71, which should come out in a couple of weeks, which lets you make asynchronous method calls or method calls which will go into the glib main loop and make your UI continue responding whilst you're waiting for dbus replies. Probably going to end up being the upstream maintainers of dbus glib and then making dbus glib not suck in a similar way. At the moment, the kind of main client that we develop in when we can is the empathy GNOME client, and that uses libtelepathy, which is the kind of horrible predecessor. But there's hopefully a demo which I can show you of tubes hacked into gtetranet and empathy. So there's a patch to gtetranet that uses libempathy to allow us to choose a contact and export the server through a Zoom tube. And there's a patch to empathy which says, ooh, an incoming tube, let's start gtetranet. So basically this is the C example, C version of the previous example. Uh, So this is Empathy here. I'm signed into a test account, and I'm subscribed to the LCA test contact who's running inside Zephyr here. I should be able to just run gtouchnet. Now that's started a TouchNet server as usual, and the contact I've chosen has been sent a StreamTube offer, which is called the Empathy Channel Handler. It says, oh, there's a tube, and it's X TouchNet, and let's accept that, which means that we're now both in this pre-game chat room, and there is a game, and you can watch me play Tetris with myself. yeah, so that's all going through the through StreamTube. Obviously, it's a bit of a contrived demo because TouchNet is connected to Gabble on my account, which is connected to the Java server, which is connected to the test account, this kind of thing. But it is going through tubes, and it's all working wonderfully, and isn't that great? So that looks something like this. Connection manager on both ends is connected through XMPP. And CTouchNet is connecting to the server and exporting it through tubes, and then there's a proxy socket on the other end, which is to the gTouchNet client here. Just looks like a gTouchNet server, but actually it goes through whatever's necessary to make it appear at the other end. The OLPC stuff, as I said earlier, uses either XMPP or link local XMPP, and the present service takes care of signing in to either of those protocols. And the activities just find contact out of the present service and set up tubes by talking directly to the connection manager. I'd hoped to do an exciting demo here, but unfortunately it doesn't work. Well, no. I've got, I wanted to run QMU so that you could all see wonderful collaborative stuff, but it doesn't work. QMU hates me, so I can't. But if you grab anyone who has an OLPC, then any of the activities that you use there are using telepathy and go through either a server or link local connection, depending on whether they've been set up with a server or not. And there are lots of OLPCs floating around, so go and have a play. There's lots of stuff there, like distance measuring, which is really cool. So you can just have a pair of OLPCs and point at each other, and they make funny noises, and they work out how far away they are by timing the difference between the sound and the network traffic. Yep. Yeah. The other kind of poster child kind of application for telepathy is the Abbey Word, Abbey Collab backend. They have a Tubes plugin which uses telepathy backends through Tubes, and from Python it's very easy to just get an Abbey Word object and then say here's a Tubes channel, go for it, and then you have collaborative editing. So they've layered their kind of collaborative stuff on top of telepathy for the OLPC. There's chat activity, that doesn't use tubes, it's not that interesting. The camera stuff. Yes, my nieces are enjoying it as well. So yeah, that uses Dbus tubes to send around the pictures that are taken on one laptop so that people who've joined in the kind of session the activity. See those pictures and videos and things appearing at the bottom. They can download them, view them, save them, that kind of stuff. But that's all using Dbus tubes to send all that around. That's more fun because then you have to use Dbus from Squeak. Yep.
Because there's a full object system in Squeak, so literally they're scooping the other guy a instance of the object while it was running, so it just continues running. Yeah. It's really mind-bendingly cool.
So there's a bit of a problem in getting people to use this stuff, because one of the benefits is that you just use it to talk to people who your normal IM contacts, people who are already in a contact list, that kind of thing. And there's no reason for people to switch from Pidgin or the client they use to Empathy, which will probably work just as well, or maybe slightly wobblier, which means that they're not going to be using telepathy, which means that there's no incentive for anybody to actually bother implementing functionality in an application that uses telepathy because nobody uses it, and vice versa. Nobody's going to switch to telepathy until those applications exist, and they don't yet because no one uses telepathy. So you can help one way or the other if you want to help us make Empathy better so that people switch to it, or you can hook your application into telepathy and give people a compelling reason to discard their previous inferior IAM clients, use Empathy, and embrace the exciting new telepathy future. Some stuff that I've mentioned that we need to kind of go and sort out. Something that's actually come from people in LPC is that they want to be able to do some real-time stuff, so, you know, push to talk, all this kind of thing. So where it's time-critical and they'd rather send UDP data or VPNs or something. So datagram tubes, something we should look into doing, obviously. Daf is giving a talk tomorrow morning about LibNice, which is a natural versal library, which we work on at Canberra. And obviously we should put that to work in Gabble so that we can use magical UDP natraversal stuff, possibly implementing our own kind of reliability layer, although I'm hoping to try and avoid that. And then it'll use peer-to-peer traffic wherever possible and avoid that Base64 server round trip. There's some unsolved issues in the telepathy spec, like working out which applications it's worth sending somebody an invite for. Of course, we could cheat and just make an activity on each end, a program on each end, which used tubes to tell the other end what other applications you could use using tubes. It'd be kind of meta, but that might work. And also hooking up account management in the spec so that any application can just see, here are your accounts, and then get the connections, this kind of thing. At the moment, we use the Nokia Mission Control, and that's not accessible from non-sort of GDIP languages. And obviously, everyone's applications, which we use telepathy tubes, and be fantastic. A couple of acknowledgements for the magical tube stuff. This guy, Mads Christian Ullesen, was the original guy who started working on this stuff when it wasn't called tubes. It was called Application Data Channels, Summer of Code, the year before last. Didn't quite work then, and we didn't quite know what we wanted to do with it, but he gave us a load of code which we kind of integrated into our tubes when we sort of designed it and worked out what was going on. Sherd is the guy who wrote Slew and the Cleek multicar stuff, and it's all absolutely magical, and you can do dbus multi-user tube stuff on networks without servers. That's very cool. Guillaume, who's been working for us on inventing tubes in Gabble and in Slew and hooking all that up, and Simon, who has reviewed all the specs and code and patches and all sorts of things. So that's the end of my talk. Thank you for listening. And does anybody have any questions?
With the Tetragon example you had,
yeah.
So you basically set up a server on one machine,
yeah.
And it's spoken up a tube, but on the other end, you have a patched version of Empathy, which would then start up
if it saw a certain type of tube method. What would happen if I didn't have the patch version of Empathy, or if before I got an unknown type of tube method, is there any sort of way of activating applications in response to sort of having a tube method?
There's
no kind of MIME type registry for DNS SD things, so there's no kind of particularly easy way of doing that automatically. With the dbus tubes, then the service name is always identified by a dbus service. So there's a scope for us to standardize an API which says, somebody just sent me a tube for this service, here it is. You can deal with it now. That's something we need to solve. And it goes kind of hand in hand with the capabilities thing. So knowing what applications you can launch with somebody on the other end, that entails them telling you what applications they know how to launch. So that they can deal with the incoming requests. The dbus stuff should be easier because we can use the service name and use dbus activation and then send stuff in. But when we're launching kind of arbitrary programs like VNC viewers or Tetranet or Quake or Palm or whatever, then it's a bit harder. Any other questions? Yeah.
In your day-to-day examples,
At the moment, the API is geared towards you have a service that's listening on a socket and you just want to invite other people to connect to it. You can actually use a VNC client and server backwards anyway. So the VNC client listens and then you tell the server to connect to it, which would let you kind of use tubes for that. But we could add that possibly, but at the moment it's more geared towards I have something, and it'll be the service, and then somebody will connect to it. So here are some files that's, you know, would you like to see them? Or, you know, here's my desktop. Can you please help me fix my network or whatever? Well, probably not. That probably works. But any more questions?
Is that example limited to work
together? No, I could replace the 4 with 6 and put lots more colons in, and it would work wonderfully. Lots more colons in. And then it would work wonderfully. So the address types are plumbed in appropriately, 4 or 6, in both backends. But actually, we implemented it with Unix sockets first. The IP stuff is just so you don't have to patch in the list on the Unix socket instead. But over localhost, it doesn't really matter. Any more questions?
I'm curious about the reliable multicast protocol. Could you give more details?
I don't know in a huge amount of detail how it works. My understanding was listed in the slide, but every multi-user chat is they generate a random multicast address and port, and that gets sent to potential participants who are invited in to the chat. Then they start sending heartbeats to let other people know that they're connected. And there's obviously timeout to work out the network's just fallen in half, or those people have run out of battery and this kind of thing. So there's no particular server, it's a peer-to-peer protocol. Messages are just emitted out and they're cached by members who receive them. Those people send messages. So every message has got this kind of counter attached. So each member that everyone knows about has a counter, and it's attached to each message, which limits the scalability slightly. But, you know, you can get up to 100 people or something. Doesn't really have any problems. And you use the counter. If the counter skips, then you know that you've missed a message. And you just ask somebody who had that counter, what was the message I missed? So that even if you can't get messages from kind of one of the networks to the other, you can get them to here, then you can always get them off this guy. So it's sort of unicasts the requests to get back the messages that have been missed. Each node delays delivering messages up to the higher layer until it's received any messages that sort of came before that one. So it kind of gives you the same kind of idea as TCP, you know, you don't get data coming in out of order. Thank you very much.